You're listening to The Issues of Life with marriage, family, and child counselor John Jolly. Stay with us for the next hour as we explore what's behind the situations and relationships that make up the issues of your life. Now, here's John.
Hello, everyone. This is John Jolliffe, and welcome to the next issue of Life. I'd like to talk to you about what is most prominent in the news today, and that is the two young children who were found dead in Union, South Carolina. And the Susan Smith story that is unfolding, and even now as we speak, that's the young mother, 23 years old, who went on national television to suggest that a 1990 Mazda, her own car, had been stopped, and there was a black man who had taken her children, driven off, and didn't let her two children, Michael, age 3, and his younger brother, Alexander, age 14 months, would not let the mother take the children from the car, drove them off, and hasn't been heard since. That was the story. And she went on the national television on the Today Show and even told the story further. And she said, I cannot believe that anyone would even suspect that I would be capable of any kind of harm to my children. It hurts me. It hurts to know that I would be accused of even the thought that I would ever do something to harm my children, she said on the NBC Today Show. I think that was last Wednesday. Well, as it happened, Thursday, she is the very perpetrator of this violent crime. She has killed both of her children and put the car into a lake and denied it for 3 or 4 days. And now, of course, the truth has come out that she did kill her own children. Her and her husband had been separated. They were going through a custody battle. And that was filed, the divorce was filed in September. Interviews today of Susan Smith by the pastor of the church where she attended, her teachers in elementary school, other people who knew her said that she was the most wonderful mother. They just absolutely cannot believe that she could possibly do it, and yet she's confessed. She's confessed to killing her own children. The question, this 9-day tragedy, holding the nation just transfixed to the television. How could such a thing happen? How is it that whatever character or whatever intelligence or whatever goodness that these people witnessed, was it not enough to keep her from this terrible act? How is it? I want to talk about insane states. When we are sane, when we're functioning, even when we're not functioning at our best, but we're functioning with reality, we see with our eyes and we hear with our ears. But when you enter an insane state, and I'm going to define that in just a moment, when you enter an insane state, you no longer see with your eyes, you see with your memory. That's right. You hear by other means, as if in a dream. Almost every bizarre murder has as a condition denied feelings that are not felt, but that get acted out directly in some kind of symbolic form. These symbolic rituals are in fact temporary insane states in which the present reality is submerged by the past feelings that are already on the rise, and our consciousness, our awareness is then diminished, and what is unconscious begins to take over. And the intensity of these behaviors and compulsions or rituals is commensurate to the intensity of the unconscious pain. Bizarre murder is no less a ritual than, let's say, sexual perversions, except that the force takes on a violent form as opposed to a sexual form. So whether it takes a violent form or a sexual one will depend upon the life circumstances of the individual. I want you to pay attention to Susan Smith and this whole subject that's going to be coming out on her life. And I want you to see, I want you to understand, I want you to learn what took place in this child, as a child, what took place in her life that didn't allow her to process whatever disappointment, whatever fears, whatever trauma. What happened in this person's life to turn her into a murderer? How is it? And I think we all need to understand that so that we're not living with some kind of frightful experience ourselves. Because who hasn't been traumatized? Who hasn't been affected in one way or another in our childhoods? So what makes us so different from a 23-year-old Susan Smith, good mother and Christian lady? What makes her so different than us? If, as a child is given nothing, beaten, humiliated, and not allowed to express one's feelings, that child may develop a fountain of rage to be discharged later against people, children, spouses, or the environment. What happens in a bizarre murder is interesting, if not in one sense. For instance, a girlfriend is being unfaithful. That may trigger an unconscious memory of a mother being unfaithful or abandoning the child. And though the actual scene memory may be unconscious, the overpowering feelings are set off. They're triggered. And abuse or murder results. The killer becomes lost in these unresolved conflicts, these past feelings. Present consciousness and awareness is dimmed, and the girlfriend, mother, dies. The girlfriend was but a symbolic stand-in for the reality never faced, felt, or accepted. Murders occur when the person has no idea of what they're feeling. There is no help with those overwhelming feelings, and they succumb to the intense pressure in terms of the acting out ritual. Feelings form the base of an elaborate symbolic ritual, and it is futile to attempt to untangle the meaning of the ritual because feelings will do it automatically. All you have to do is to ask people to tell the feeling. Express the feeling, express the conflict. Unfortunately, I think we'll find out that Susan Smith was ill-equipped to express the terrible turmoil or fear that she was experiencing. Now, maybe what was happening is that in this custody battle, she was afraid of losing her children, losing custody of her own children. How many mothers and fathers alike feel that their children are their whole lives? And to lose custody of your children, to not be able to live with or put to bed your children each night, it feels like life is over. And in an insane state, whatever that triggered in her in terms of abandonment and not being available and other kinds of things, not being able to be a better mother than the mother she had or not being able to provide for her children, she may have lost it and didn't want to give her husband the satisfaction of having custody. Taking the life of her children was to keep him from having what she desperately needed for her own life. We don't know. We'll find out as the story develops, I'm sure. What then is the difference between those with thoughts or fantasies of killing and those who actually act them out? Every murder begins with a thought. It begins with an idea. It begins with a fantasy. But as the feelings begin to overtake us, more and more of one's life, so that the head alone, our minds, our intelligence, all that we know is true, all that makes common sense, the head alone cannot control the impulse and it begins to generalize to the whole body. You see, it's very important what I'm telling you about learning how to express yourself, giving your children the opportunity to have a platform. You may not like what your children have to say. You may not agree with the way they say it or what they have to say. But please, give yourself and give your families the platform to speak out, to talk out, to believe there's hope in talking out your conflicts and your fears. It's not enough to tell people, you know, I want you always to tell me the truth. I want you always to be able to speak up. You have that right. And then not give them the exercise or the practice. Give them the practice, please. But watch the story as it develops. I think you'll learn a whole lot more of what's going on between the lines. My name is John Jolliffe. Get on the lines. Let's talk. Toll free, 1-800-4-ISSUES. That's 1-800-447-7837. We'll be back in just a commercial minute or two with the first issue of Life.
John Jolliffe calls it free and unsolicited information, sometimes painful but constructive, pushing out the boundaries of what is familiar. He's talking about feedback, the things people say to you about you. In his popular cassette, The Value of Feedback, John encourages us to stretch ourselves by getting feedback from others. How to handle painful feedback and how to identify helpful feedback and incorporate it into our lives. The Value of Feedback, just $7.95 from The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or if you prefer to use your Visa or MasterCard, call 1-800-4-ISSUES. Be sure to mention that title, The Value of Feedback. The address again, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or call 1-800-447-7837.
This is John Jolliffe, and listen, if you call and you get a busy signal, I want you to call back, because we've got a lot of program left, and I want to talk to every one of you. Remember, November 8th, we're having our seminar at the Holiday Inn. This particular November 8th, Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, it's on personal power. What is it? How do you get it, and how do you keep it? 7 o'clock at the Holiday Inn. Okay? All right, let's speak to Lillian. She has a question to start the program. Hello, Lillian.
Yes, hello. This is my first-time caller, and I really enjoyed last week. My question is, I've been married for 12 years, and I've been separated. This is the second time. And and you were speaking about the separation agreement, which has to be done before you do this. See, the first time I was separated, we didn't do that. But this time I would be really interested if you can be more specific. What do you mean by that?
Well, let me ask you the question. When you think of separation, I've told you before that I think that you should never separate without good counsel.
We've been in a counseling for 1 year prior to first separation.
Okay. But I'm talking about good counsel in terms of the separation, so that the two of you can formulate a separation agreement. Now, what do you think would be included in a separation agreement?
Well, see, my husband was not a good provider, and came from an abandoned father who left me.
All right, that's the history. What I'm asking you is about the separation agreement.
Uh-huh.
What would be included in a separation agreement? What would you want to have agreed?
Well, first of all, he was not a good provider, so I would like him to change. I mean, he has to care about the house, and he has to care about me.
Before you would what?
I mean, before I would think going back to him, because
that's right.
It's like I lost the love for him. You know, I have so much anger right now.
That's right. And sometimes what happens is you separate out of anger.
That's right.
And then you reconcile out of missing one's one's spouse, or because you've been apart for some time, you know, it feels like things have improved.
That's
so
right.
A separation agreement is an understanding as to why the separation is occurring and what has to happen in order for either of you to be encouraged to reconcile, and that you should not reconcile until you see these improvements, until you see these changes. But you need to have that worked out with your counselor before you ever enter into a separation. You see, it's like any kind of plan. You must plan in terms of this.
Okay. Now, I know we are Christians, and I know it in the Bible says God hates divorce or something. You know, he talks about that.
Remember, a separation is not necessarily a rehearsal for a divorce.
That's true.
It oftentimes brings the bottom up for the couple or for the individual to let them know there is a serious problem, and this is not going to be a dirty little secret anymore. People are going to know, the children are going to know. We're going to have to seriously deal with this issue. But we're not going to reconcile just out of embarrassment or out of need or other things. It may also be helpful during the separation to get good legal advice as to your rights and things like that, so that you're not naive during this time of separation. Because a lot of things will be said to manipulate you to either reconcile or threaten you in terms of divorce unless you, you know, compromise. So get good legal advice, be able to be strong and stand on what you know is right, but get the agreement written before you ever go into it. Okay?
Okay.
All right, Lillian.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yes, very, very important to know. You don't want to. I've said the same thing regarding marriage. You never want to get married just out of love. Love may be one of the poorest reasons in the world to get married. Love certainly is important, but what about respect? Isn't respect as much as important as love? And planning, compatibility, maybe common faith and other kinds of things? Listen, whenever you do anything that's going to impact your life, make sure you get wise counsel. Where there's a multitude of counselors, there's wisdom, and plans aren't frustrated, and there's a hope, right? So whether you're going to do premarital counseling or a separation agreement or other things, make sure you get good, wise counsel. Let's talk to, let's see, I think it's Darian. Darian?
Yes, hello.
Welcome to The Issues.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call, John.
Yes.
My question is how to, I'm trying to figure out what God would want me to do regarding my biological father. I am 32 years old, and I found him. I trapped him down when I was 19.
So you were adopted, or?
My grandparents raised me. Okay. I had a wonderful upbringing by my grandparents. My mom was always around. She's been remarried and very happily for the last 20 years.
But you didn't live with her?
I didn't live with her, no. I lived with my grandparents.
Okay.
And we have a wonderful relationship, and
all right.
That's very, very loving and good.
And you did a birth search and found your birth father?
You'll never believe this. I called information, found his name, and my real grandparents, who passed away when I was 15, they had sent him pictures and letters my whole life, so he knew everything about me.
And so where did you go after you were 15?
I stayed with my aunt and uncle and my two cousins. They happened to be close to my high school, so
okay.
I was raised by them. Very loving, very wonderful blessing that I had a lot of loving people around. But I made an attempt to find him, and first thing I did was I brought him to church.
Okay.
And he would go, and he had never left the house. He's about 50 years old, and he's lived at home his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
He's never had a job.
Okay.
And
so your question to me is?
My question is, he's very ill. He's living with his mother, who's very ill. I have, as much as I possibly could, I visited them and served them in any way I could.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening is I feel like my eyes have been opened because the words that they say to me and their actions are none, but the words that they say to me are very hurtful. If I go over there and spend 3 hours, it's not enough. If I, you know, they critique what I'm doing in my life, or they just say really hurtful things to me.
Okay, and your question?
I need to know, in my heart, I'm afraid that they're both going to die tomorrow, and I will look back and I will think that I didn't do the right thing, and I feel that I need to stay away from him. But I just thought, well, because he is my biological father, and he even told me, he said, I never would have found you.
So what is the right thing?
Well, I feel like if I don't stay away, it brings me down so much, John.
I understand that, but you're saying that the part of you wants to stay away because of the disrespect.
Yes.
But there's another part of you that thinks that he might die and you didn't do the right thing.
I didn't see him enough, or I didn't, you know, I...
Are you buying into the fact of what, I guess, he and his mother are saying is that you're not enough, you're not doing enough, something enough. Are you buying into that?
Yeah, I guess they're whatever they've said to me.
Okay.
Because they have no one in their life. They have no friends.
Okay.
So whatever.
Not enough to. Whenever I hear the comment, "You're not enough," I always want to ask, "Not enough for what, or to whom?"
Okay.
See what I mean?
Yes.
So you're not enough for what? To make them happy? They've got an empty life. They're not doing much with their life.
Right.
Therefore, they're dissatisfied.
Right.
Are they asking you to do something to fulfill them? To make them happy?
Yes.
Okay, then you aren't enough. And you can never be enough.
Okay.
Because you can't do for somebody else what they must do for themselves.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Okay, so go ahead and admit it.
Okay.
I mean, you're powerless to make somebody else's life fulfilling.
Okay.
Okay.
You can't complete anybody. You can't fix anybody. You can't save anybody. You can't do anything for anybody.
Okay.
Like that. And sometimes we buy into that.
Yes.
The truth is, if the truest truth were known, the truth is they're not doing enough for you. But you know what? You don't have to hate them or be angry with them because you can understand it.
Yes.
They can't give you any more than they have.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Okay.
Well, would physically being staying away from them and just I was thinking I feel like I need to do something like write a letter and say, you know, I'm sorry that I don't ever measure up to your expectations or
remember, the letter writing is a good idea. And after you write the letter, read it again and say, make sure it expresses your true feelings.
Okay.
And then read it aloud so you hear it.
Okay.
It's always important to hear what you think and feel.
Okay.
Right? It always must be spoken. But the idea of writing the letter to them is not necessarily what they may come to understand, but
right.
what you might understand.
Right.
Okay? And right. then you can choose to either send it or burn it.
Okay.
I'd always keep a copy, though.
Okay. Okay. I made a copy and I was going to do that. I just didn't.
Oh, you have the letter there?
I don't have it right in front of me, but
okay.
it was basically a little bit of what you had said to me. I said,
good.
I don't seem to be able to fulfill the things that you want from me, and I was merely in your life as somebody that you knew you could call on. And
okay, but remember, something. As much as you confess about not being able to fulfill their life
mm-hmm.
and satisfy them, also understand that it wasn't your job.
Right.
It has to be in the letter, too.
Right.
Because it's really a letter for you, not for them.
Right.
Okay, my friend.
Thank you very much.
You did the right thing.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Very important. Remember, when you write letters, these are letters that you write for yourself to be clear, to understand, and then always, 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 I would have told this to Susan Smith if I'd known her, always, always, always give yourself a platform to speak out, to share your thoughts and feelings, even if it's only with yourself. You can get a hold of, you can surround something when you understand what it is. Okay. I'm going to take Deborah's call, and then we've got a couple, Gail and John, to follow. Let's take Deborah's call. Hello, Deborah.
Hi.
You are pregnant?
Yes, I'm pregnant. And probably a month ago, I had this really weird dream. I had a dream that that somebody has shot me 13 times in my stomach, and I've had other dreams before I got married of men shooting me. And I guess when I get really scared, I pray. You know, I get in the spirit really quick, and I just pray. And so in my dreams, that's what I do. Like, when they're shooting me, I get in the spirit, and I pray, in tongues. And
well, now, you're how old, Deborah?
I'm 21.
Are you pregnant?
Yes.
And you had a dream about some kind of violent death to your child?
No, I don't know if somebody, it was to me. I mean, this person, I was in this jail, and they were shooting me, and they shot me all in the stomach, and I saw the wounds, and I counted them, which I'd never done before, but I thought, I'm going to count them, so I counted them. There were 13. They're all my uterus and my stomach.
Mm-hmm. And did the baby die in the dream?
No, I asked the doctor, because I was praying,
mm-hmm.
and the doctor said that, you know, the baby's fine, and you're going to live, and he just took all the bullets out, and I watched them and everything.
Uh-huh, okay. Well, you want to talk about this on the other side of the commercial?
Sure.
Okay, interesting. We're going to talk to Deborah, and we'll talk to the rest of you in just a moment about some of these interesting issues called your life. My name is John Jolliffe. We'll be back in a commercial minute or two. Why don't you call a friend and tell them to tune in to the Issues of Life. John Jolliffe, and we're talking to Deborah. Deborah's 21 years old. She's been pregnant now for how long, Deborah?
2 months.
2 months?
Uh-huh.
And you had this dream
yes.
of being shot in the stomach 13 times.
Yes.
You watched the doctor pull out the bullets, and the child was not injured.
No.
And who shot you?
I don't know who shot me. Usually it's men that shoot me in my dreams.
Okay.
But I don't know who it was because I was in a jail.
And were they trying to kill you or the pregnancy?
They were trying to kill me.
Kill you?
They always are, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have this kind of dream or a similar kind of thing?
Yeah, well, before I had like four other times before I got married.
But it was not, you weren't pregnant then?
No, I was not pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
No, I just didn't have any dreams of people, you know, men shooting me. But it's weird because in my dreams, I'm praying when they're shooting me that God will protect me and that, you know, that no harm will come to me, and I believe God.
And have you ever understood this dream?
No, that's what I have a therapist, and I asked her. I told her about it, and she can't, you know, put her finger on it. And I don't know what it means, but it is like ongoing, and I.
Well, you never bleed.
No, I never bleed.
And you never die.
I never die.
Uh huh. And what saves you?
God.
God saves you each time.
Yeah, well, that's what I feel.
Okay, and it's always a man.
Yes, it was this time. It was he was more vivid this time. He was real tall and big and had blonde hair.
Okay, and when you're being shot at, well, back up. When you are in your real life, not your dream life, but in your real life, what is happening surrounding those events? Are you just about getting married?
I got married 3 months ago.
Okay, but I'm talking about when you have those dreams, what's happening in your real life?
Oh, really nothing. I'm in therapy about my father.
No, I'm talking about what's really happening in your real life.
Oh.
For instance, this particular time, you're pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And are you looking forward to the pregnancy?
Oh, yeah.
You want to be a mom?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And so that's one of the experiences. What's happening in the other three? Is there any kind of thread or theme? Are you, like, happy and looking forward to something and moving ahead with your life?
Well, I know that before I got married, I didn't know if I wanted my real father to come to the wedding. I was a little hesitant about that.
Okay.
And so that, before the wedding, that might have triggered something.
This is your real father, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
But,
and you may not have wanted him to come?
I didn't know if I should have him come because... You know, I've been in therapy and I haven't talked to him in a long time.
Why would you not want your real father at your wedding?
Well, he molested me for about 5 years when I was younger.
And how old were you when you started? He started?
When I started therapy?
No, when he started molesting you.
When I was in first grade, when my parents got divorced.
First grade?
Yes.
And then how long did he molest you?
Till fifth grade.
Till fifth grade?
Yeah.
Okay. And how many children in the family?
There's three.
Three.
I have an older brother and a younger brother.
Uh-huh.
And my older brother, as soon as I left my father, I live with my mom.
Uh-huh.
And my brother, he would come to me and ask favors sexually from me.
Mm-hmm.
We never had intercourse that I can recall, but he told me that he used to make me fondle him. And
well, now, how old was he? When that's
he was 2 years older, so I was 11 and he was 13. And he told me he did it because he watched my dad do it to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's that number, though, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
There's the 13. Okay, and so when you're thinking about having a wedding and you're thinking maybe you won't involve your father, then you later, soon around that, have a dream of being shot?
I think it was around that time.
Okay, and that's two examples. One is you're getting married, and you have this dream of not getting to the marriage. And now you're looking forward to having a child, and you have this dream of not getting to being a mother.
Uh-huh.
Because both of those dreams are a dream of preventing you from being happy, from having what you want. I'm not sure why it's a gun. Did your father have guns?
No.
Was he a police officer?
A gun dealer, maybe.
What?
My brother was a gun dealer. He dealt guns.
your brother's a gun dealer?
He was, yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know, then my husband, he works graveyard right now.
Okay.
And so I'm at home alone at night, and so he's like, oh, let's get a gun for the house. And I'm like, no, I'd rather pray.
Okay.
I don't want no guns. So.
Okay, so we're putting some things together.
Uh-huh.
The number 13, your brother was 13 when he was molesting you. You were shot 13 times with a gun. Your brother was a gun dealer. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And each case you have this dream, it's because of something that you're going to be able to do that you've been looking forward to doing, like getting married, having a child, having a family. And if you would connect up the last two or the first two dreams, you would probably will find something similar to that. And so in your therapy, are you dealing with brother?
Yeah, on and off.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, on and off. Not all the time.
Were you more terrorized by your brother than your father?
My brother came to me like years ago and told me that, I did things to you, don't you remember? And he told me different things that he could remember, and then it made me remember.
And you didn't remember before?
But I didn't remember before. I totally blocked my dad and my brother completely out of my mind.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're doing the right thing by talking out. What you want to do is you don't want to just do a head trip on therapy, meaning just talk from your head. Do an information dump. Facts, figures, dates, times, people, names. You want to get connected to the feelings, too. Whatever the feelings were of being held back or overwhelmed or not going to live. You thought you were going to die when you were being molested. You might have felt...
Probably,
all those kinds of things. You might have even had murderous thoughts that you were going to have to kill your brother or your father.
My father, yeah.
Did you have thoughts of killing him?
Oh, yeah. Wanted to, desperately.
Okay. And how long did you want to kill your father? How long do you remember having these thoughts?
Oh, since I was really young, since probably when he started. I mean, young.
So young is what, first grade?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was really young.
So from 6 years old, you wanted to kill your father until what age?
Probably just recently.
Okay, and you're 21?
Yes.
So 20 years old, 19?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So for 14 or most of your years of your life, you're 21 now and
yes.
From the age of 6, so there are really only 5 or 6 years of your whole life that you didn't want to kill your father.
Yeah.
So death is all part of, your theme life.
Yeah, because my dreams, because I don't get a deep sleep because my father molested me a lot when I was sleeping, so...
And now your husband's gone when you're sleeping.
Uh-huh.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think what I would do in your therapy is I would put you in a relaxed position and let you freely associate and connect up with some of those feelings of being asleep. I might even say you should lie down on the sofa. So you get in that kind of horizontal position. Again, all of this very symbolic, and take yourself back to that feeling and recognize that today you're not helpless like a child.
Yeah.
Life moved on. Your emotions haven't caught up.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have to do is catch your feelings up with what's going on so that you know how to better handle yourself. Some self-defense courses are good. Some burglar alarms and sensing devices are good. Anything that would give you an advantage. That's all you need is an advantage. And then you can call 911 or you can do other things, you see?
Yeah.
So put yourself and connect up with a feeling. Don't just do an information dump. Okay?
Okay.
I appreciate you calling, Deborah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yep, very important. Sometimes what we do is we go in to our therapy and we give them all the facts and the details, but we never connect up with a feeling. It's the feeling that you have to heal, not just the facts. Let's talk to Gail and John. Hello, Gail and John.
Hi.
Thanks for waiting. Uh-oh. What happened? Hello? Are you there? Hold on a second. Just hold on a second. I went to my next call and forgot to hang up my last one. There we are. Are you there, Gail and John?
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. John and I have been married for 6 months.
Uh-huh.
I have a 14-year-old, and John has a 27-year-old, and we all live together. The 27-year-old seems to be adjusting to it quite well. I mean, he's an adult. But the 14-year-old just flatly refuses to be under John's rule or authority.
Now, the 14-year-old is your child by a previous relationship?
Yes, it's mine.
Now, if I remember correctly, Gail, did you call me yesterday?
No, I didn't.
Or 2 days ago or something?
No, I called you a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, we talked, though, about that, and I encourage you to have John call or
no.
Call me together?
No. No, that's interesting. No.
Well, there was somebody called, I guess, yesterday or the day before about something very similar.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
No, we're struggling with him, though.
Okay, with him? Who's him?
Well, we're having difficulty trying to make some adjustments to get comfortable with our feelings as to what our next step should be.
Okay, with the 14-year-old who's not kind of going along with the program?
Right. He flatly refuses.
How much time passed, Gail, between your divorce from his father? I'm assuming you were married before, or no?
No, I was not married to his father, so he never lived with his father.
Okay.
He lived with my son, who was older, or we all lived together.
Okay.
And
now, how old is your older son?
He's 14 years older than this, the 14-year-old.
Okay,
he's
so
deceased. He's been deceased for 4 years.
Kind of like a father.
Yes, he was.
He's 28, and this boy's 14.
Right.
And so when you got married to John, you took your son, your 14-year-old son, away from his older brother.
Well, his older brother died 4 years ago.
Oh, okay. How did he die?
In a car accident.
Suddenly?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when you started dating John, did your son feel comfortable with John?
Well, not particularly, because we kind of dated around him, I think, to a certain extent. We could comfortably say that we dated around him, because in the between we were dating, he was going to a karate school, he was doing some other things, he was going to choir rehearsal, and we were doing some other things. And I think we kind of may have totally completely included him.
Okay, so you got married maybe for companionship, Gail, because you love John.
Yes, I love John.
Uh-huh. My advice is always, don't marry for companionship if your children are not in on the program. And wait until you can get it discussed and understood and resolved so that your child allows your husband, his stepfather, to be a residential parent, so that he can parent that child, so the child wants and accepts that man. Don't marry for companionship if her children are not on the program. You see what I'm saying? Get it resolved or don't get married. We're going to talk off the air, and we'll talk on the other side of the commercial as well.
There's no question about it. Life can be a painful experience. That's why some people work overtime to avoid getting hurt. Naturally, there's nothing wrong with avoiding pain, unless you wind up avoiding life in the process. If you or someone you know keeps their feelings in a deep freeze, you ought to get a copy of John Jolliffe's special cassette, Emotional Anesthetics. In this assortment of conversations from the Issues of Life broadcast, John deals with callers who've traded negative feelings for no feelings at all. He explores ways that lonely, isolated people can let down their guard without getting trampled in the process. Emotional Anesthetics, just $7.95 when you write to The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or call us at 1-800-4-ISSUES and have your Visa or MasterCard handy. Either way, be sure to mention that title, Emotional Anesthetics. The address again, The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or call 1-800-447-7837.
John Jolliffe, and we're speaking to Gail and John. They've been married for about 6 months. They have two children, one by each previous marriage. They have a 27-year-old daughter, I think, isn't it, John? 27-year-old son that is John's previous marriage, and Gail has a 14-year-old boy and a 28-year-old son. The 14-year-old boy is living with you, and your 28-year-old died, I think, 4 years ago. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. The 14-year-old boy, as we were talking off the air, the 14-year-old boy was brought along into this marriage. If you had asked him, how does he feel about this marriage, he probably would have said what?
No, he didn't want me to be married.
Did he ever tell you that before?
Yes.
And what did he say as to the reason?
We could just live like we had been living ever since Larry died. It should just be he and I.
Uh-huh. And what did you say to that?
But I wanted to be married.
I want to be married because you, my son, cannot fulfill me the way a man or a husband can.
we went over that, that I loved John and that I wanted a family. And, yeah, I tried to get him to understand that I didn't love him any less. I just wanted us to be a family.
Do you think he understood that?
He says that he did, but I don't think that he does.
But by his behavior, the fact that John wants to give advice to him about schoolwork and cleaning the room and other kinds of things, and John, you said so well, he never really knew how to bond or connect with a man.
Right.
He's always related to a woman because you've always been together. You were his closest buddy, his pal, his everything.
That's right.
And after 14 years, you decided to get married. And you basically abandoned him. I'm sure that's part of the feeling he has,
yes.
Is that he wasn't enough. And his anger and his pain is showing up in his acting out.
Right. We have sit down and had sessions where I say, well, let us all talk about how we feel. And I have allowed him to talk about how he feels. And when he gets to the feeling that he really feels, he closes up. He will not open up, but he will let you in just enough to know that he's not going to do.
Typically what that means is that if I told you the truth, if I actually told you the truth, it would be so unacceptable that you would want nothing to do with me. I already lost my place with my mother. And I didn't even tell the truth other than I just didn't want her to get married. But when I tell her the truest truth, then, oh, it would be so unacceptable. So I bury and I park all of that.
Right.
That's what part of what Deborah was saying about her father. She's wanted to kill her father for 14 of her 21 years. But she's never told her father that, and she's probably never told her mother or maybe even her own therapist that. You see? And so what we have to do is we have all the insight and all of the, probably we're making all the proper connections with what's going on. But it's not what we're going to tell him. It's what he has yet to tell someone. And I always recommend a pastor or a counselor or a therapist to begin that first step. It's really okay to feel like you want to kill somebody. I mean, obviously we want to help you heal that. But it's not the worst thing in the world to say you want to kill somebody.
So I asked her, as we were just talking today, and I asked her to have him to draw a portrait of our family as it stands to see what it looks like from his point of view.
That's good.
We could try to get some kind of idea.
Excellent idea.
Of where he is, but you know, it's like it's just an idea that's floating around to try to get up.
Yeah, but you didn't tell him, or you did tell him?
No. We were talking about just before we called you.
Okay, yeah. But again, I think anything that you do will be diagnostic, and I think we probably know enough. Although I think that the portrait idea is a good idea, that's oftentimes associated with art therapy. I think it's a good idea, John, if he'll cooperate.
Yeah.
But even if he cooperates and draws the picture, we still have got to get him to somebody where he can feel free enough and comfortable enough to talk where he's not going to feel threatened.
Right.
And where things are confidential. Okay?
Right.
So, if you want to stay on the line, we'll make some good referrals to you. But I would suggest that the family go in for one session together, the three of you.
Okay.
The 27-year-old, is that person involved at all?
Yes.
Lives at home?
Yes,
he lives with us.
Okay, then all four of you go, because that's a family.
Okay.
All four of you go, you have a discussion, you tell the story that you've told now. If you can take a diagram in, a piece of the artwork about the family, that's fine too. And then hopefully the therapist will realize that they need to see your son alone to talk out the true nature of his feelings, because he hasn't talked it out. The worst thing in life is to have a feeling, particularly a horrendous, murderous feeling, and not have anybody that you feel safe communicating that with.
Right.
And I think we'll find Susan Smith had a lot of those kinds of feelings.
Right.
Thank you so much, you guys. Stay on the line, and I'll give you some good referrals.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Gail.
Thank you.
Some good ideas, and here's some good parents who have a lot of creative ideas. But no matter how creative you are, you can't make people talk and take your good advice. And that's why sometimes a third party, somebody who does not love your children as much as you do, somebody who's not as familiar as you are, may be more effective. It's not a terrible thing to admit that. It happens all the time. I admit it to my children all the time. I say, you know, people pay to talk to me. They drive a long ways to come to me. All you have to do, I'm here, just talk to me. Won't even charge you. Won't even bill you. I might bill their insurance, but I won't bill them. No. Yeah, sometimes we can't. No matter what our education is, no matter how effective we might be, they just need to talk it out with somebody else because they feel safe. Okay. Let's talk to Susan. Susan, welcome to The Issues.
Thank you, John. I was intrigued in your definition earlier for insane states.
Yes. Temporary losses of consciousness.
Yes, but I'm wondering how temporary it is when the situation escalates over time. If I can give you a little bit of my background.
Yes.
My husband and I were married for 8 years, and starting towards the end of last year, we had escalated financial problems, which were really draining to the relationship. Around spring, I asked my husband if he would consider counseling, and quite frankly, he refused. He thought it would make him look like a jerk. He had had some counseling some years prior to our marriage, and he didn't feel that was successful for him. In May of this year, I discovered that he was having what he described as a phone relationship with a woman that apparently had been going on for about 3 months. During the following weeks, he actually escalated in verbal and physical violence with my 16-year-old son and threatened to kill him. At that point, since he had had some physical violence with my son before, I told him I felt I had no choice but to leave. And we did separate in July. However, I continued in dialogue with him pretty much on a daily basis, and he did concede to possible reconciliation and possible counseling. However, during the two-week period after I separated from him, I found him spending the night with the woman that he had supposedly just had.
This telephone relationship.
Yeah, right.
No reconciliation without counseling.
Right. And his statement to me at the time was that I had left him. There was no acknowledgement of the physical violence with my son.
You're not safe.
He did show up to one counseling session, and at that time it was a Christian counselor. He said that he was too weak to go through counseling. He didn't think the Lord was helping him. He did not want to go to church, and he did not want any more counseling of any sort.
At this point, you're better off being apart from him.
I feel that also.
Yes.
The problem right now in relationship to your statement about insane states,
yes,
is that he has called me several times over the past month, and he, when you said that this person really hears with their memory,
yes,
that's what I'm getting. There really is no current dialogue that makes sense.
No reality testing.
No, he's consumed with our past, and it's either dealing with things that he has said I have.
I think, again, you have to bring the bottom up. And the bottom up means that we have to be in therapy together for a session. And then hopefully make the point in front of the therapist that this man must get an individual therapy because he's not in a good place in his life. And you're not going to continue having regular conversations with him while he's out of therapy. It would be ludicrous for you and absolutely counterproductive. You and I will continue to talk. I'll talk to you on Monday, God willing.
The Issues of Life is a presentation of the Issues of Life Foundation, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801.